asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking about getting scrappy to save on streaming with Michael Timmerman.
So by my count, I think there are three ways to boost your net worth, right? So you can invest more money, but then remember, we are long-term investors. It takes a while for that compounding to really kick in. So you can earn more money, which is a ton of fun. Who doesn't like getting promoted? Who doesn't like earning a fat bonus at work? But again, this can take years of grinding it out, at the very least months of hard work in order to stand out among your peers. Or there are changes that you can literally make immediately by cutting your expenses in order to save more money. That is what we're discussing with our guest today, Michael Timmerman. And Michael, he writes over at his site, michaelsaves.com. He's got a YouTube channel. He's got over 25 million views. And I think that's because he's kind of like a human guinea pig, where he's working on our behalf. He's testing out products and services to make sure that we're all getting the best deal possible. Michael's kind of like the Tim Ferriss of personal finance nerds. But Michael, we appreciate you coming on the podcast with us today.
Human guinea pig. I like that. Thanks for having me, Matt. Thanks for having me, Joel.
I think you should add that to your bio now, Michael. Just consider it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It goes straight at the top.
Well, and by the way, Michael and I have used to work together for a lot of years, and now Michael's gone off to do his own thing. So have I. So it's kind of fun to reunite here, Michael. The first question, as you know, that we ask everybody who comes on the show is, what's your craft beer equivalent? Meaning, what is it that you're splurging on while you're also doing the smart thing with your money, you're saving and investing? So what's your craft beer equivalent, my friend?
You know, I knew this question was coming, but it's a little hard for me because I think I have a few craft beer equivalents. I might not be quite as frugal as you, Joel.
It's not the true one at all. Thing,
them's the fighting words.
No. The one thing I'd say as my craft beer equivalent has to do with plane tickets. And I've been researching a couple upcoming trips. When I'm searching on Google Flights, I can never get that cheapest fare as much as I really want to. And I think probably a lot of people can relate to this. I've got three things I'm not going to like compromise with. I want to make sure I'm either in a window or the aisle. I don't want to board last. And then there's a couple just airlines that I'll try to avoid. So those are the things. So when I'm doing the search, I just figure I'm going to have to pay an extra maybe like $30 based on what the price is.
And you live in a market where Spirit is heavy, but I'm guessing this means you don't fly Spirit.
No Spirit, no Frontier.
You're not getting those sweet deals.
That's true. The nearest airport to me is all about the budget airlines. There's Spirit, Frontier, Southwest, a lot of JetBlue. I will fly Spirit, but then that's kind of where this kicks in. It's like length of the flight matters. If it's 5 hours, I'm probably not going to be sitting in one of those tight Spirit
but
seats.
No Southwest, our favorite.
It just depends. It depends on the flight. JetBlue, I will fly a lot.
How fancy are we getting here, Michael? Are you ever doing like lie flat beds across the Atlantic kind of thing?
Absolutely not. So okay. For JetBlue is a good example. I think it's like basic. Those are the ones that I can't do. But then when it's I think it's Blue, that's when I'll go for JetBlue. I won't be the last to board. I can bring on a bag. I put everything in the carry-on, and then I can choose my seat. That's it.
That makes sense. Okay, Michael, I know you and Joel, y'all go back. You can trade war stories after we hit stop on the recording, but I get the impression that you've been frugal for a long time. You are savvy with how you handle your money. What brought that about? When did that begin in your life?
You know, I think it started for a lot of people who really get into this space with their childhood. My role model was my grandmother in particular, and she was always the one who really had it together with money. She was not wealthy, but she was comfortable, and it was because of the actions that she took. So I kind of looked up to her and like modeled myself after her. I even, during college, I lived with my grandmother, and I commuted to college to save money. But just those couple of years where we did that, I think that's where I learned a lot about personal finance. That's also where I got my introduction to Clark Howard, which is how I know Joel. Because I on the drive back and forth to school, I would listen to Clark's radio show. So it was like 20-some years ago.
So is that 1-2 punch, Grandma and Clark Howard.
Yeah, Grandma and Clark in my late teens.
Okay, so with your grandma, I'm curious, was it more osmosis? Was it like the way she lived, or was she like offering verbal instruction too? Were you guys having discussions about money, or was it just like, dang, I see grandma seems to have beyond to something in kind of the way she handles money, the way she lives, this silent type, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember having too many discussions about it. I do remember one thing. I had one of my first jobs. I was a waiter at a Denny's in a resort community. And I would come home from work every day with a stack of dollar bills. So this is before people were leaving credit card tips. And she would ask me to hand over my money, and she would count my tips. And like, if I had over $100, we'd like celebrate. So that was kind of like, I guess, a positive reinforcement at an early age. I don't remember a whole lot of conversations, but I guess the way, it was just the way that she lived and the way that she led. And she was the just really solid, dependable adult in my life. And at a time when there was like other stuff going on with some of the other adults.
Yeah.
So just a really great mentor.
Just a great role model. The ability for her to, aside from being a human teller machine, like counting up your bills. I love that that she celebrated that with you. What a great way to kind of reinforce not only the fact that you're making and hopefully saving, but that you're just, I don't know, doing a good job. It's like some additional fruit of your labor that you're able to celebrate there together.
Yeah.
I like that. But sorry for calling you that human guinea pig, by the way.
I actually think it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Because it seems like you have tried every financial tool out there. Like you tried YNAB for a while. It sounded like you liked it.
I do like YNAB.
Ultimately, though, it seems like you went with your own Google Sheets. You like, I don't know, was it the customization of creating your own thing? But it seems like you based it on like the YNAB principles. Can you share about how it is that you budget and keep up with your spending?
Well, I think this is kind of timely because I guess Mint has just shut down. I used that for a whole lot of years. And then I started kind of looking at how I thought that wasn't working so well for me. And I guess the process with that and similar apps like it, I would just open up the app and see a reflection. It was like looking in the mirror, just like, how are you doing? Whereas YNAB, I think that system and the four rules, it helps you really kind of train yourself to be more proactive, I think, with your money. So the way I adapted it is my issue is I'm not crazy about a subscription service for a budgeting app. And I know a lot of them work that way for various reasons. But with the Google Sheets, I can do the same thing. And the key for me is really just before I buy anything, I open up the Google Sheets app, I check my categories, see what I've got left to spend for the month, and then make the purchase, log it right away. I always have that opportunity to kind of be like, okay, do I really need to buy this? Do I want to buy this? Like, it's a check on yourself that I don't think you necessarily get with the tools where you're just like, I guess, putting everything on your credit card and then logging in to see, all right, what was the damage for the month?
Sure. Yeah, there's you're spending on a delay. Like, that is the downside of maximizing the different benefits that you get through using credit cards, which we're huge fans of. But the ability for you to see sort of like that timely, in the moment feedback, that's huge. And this is something that you've been able to kind of work into your general workflow. Like, you've got a weekly financial checklist.
Well, I guess one of the things, having been in writing about money since, I guess it's now been 2010, is one of the things people say to you is like, oh, you must be obsessed with money. And I'm not, and I really don't spend a whole lot of money on the budgeting, even though I'm logging those transactions with every purchase. So all I do is I set aside a few minutes on Fridays in the morning. I check to see like how all my account balances are. I pay my credit cards off every week, and then I just look back on that budget to see if there's anything that I missed. But since I'm logging everything in real time as I spend, I don't really usually find any difference between what I put on the credit cards and then what's in the budget.
I like that. When you have a system, you don't have to obsess over it, right? And so that's like, I think it's a really important takeaway there. On the guinea pig note, you're being kind of a guinea pig right now in a way that we talked about this right before we started recording, that you're seeking to earn extra money, but it also still allows you flexibility. I think gig work is something Matt and I have talked about that lots of times, especially if gig work, if that's your main source of income, it's probably, you're just trading time for money, and it's probably not the best move for you over the long haul. But I really actually kind of like your approach to some of the gig work that you're doing right now, Michael. Can you talk about that?
Well, I agree with you. I think a lot of the gig work is trading time for money. And there's a couple things that I've done just because I've got some things I'm saving up for, just like everyone listening to this. In my case, it's something I'm not really excited about. I have to get a new fence. So I've found all these ways to kind of like motivate myself to save up for that. And one of them has been with gig apps and side apps. Rover's been the most successful for me. It's probably going to depend on where you live. Where I live, there's just a ton of demand for people who can take care of pets, particularly if you have a single family home and you can care for the pets at your house. So that's kind of what's worked out. And based on...
Is this why you need the fence, by the way, so you can watch these animals?
It's actually an investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a fence, but it's falling down. So I know that I've got to like replace the fence, but I guess it kind of is an investment. I don't really see the gig app as a forever thing, but it's meeting a demand that is needed in the community. And I think that's probably the best way to go when you're looking at the gig apps, is to think, well, do I want the easiest thing for the quickest buck, or do I want to look at something that might have a higher return because there's more people in your local area who need those services? There's a ton of apps out there like Thumbtack. And if you're able to provide like, you know, power washing, or there's lots of ways to make money through these apps. And the beauty of the pet sitting apps with Rover is that you can take in animals, take care of them, but also be doing other stuff from your house. Like, so for me, with what I do with the YouTube channel, I can be editing a video and also caring for a pet.
Okay, I thought you were talking about like you're one of those guys and you've got like 15 dogs on a leash, but you're also like filling out surveys on your phone or something like that as you're walking down the sidewalk.
The ultimate multitask.
I'm not gonna, and I did try all those survey apps at one point. I think what I'm down to in terms of the kind of make money, save money apps at this point, I still use Ibotta. That's a grocery one. I use Fetch. Mm-hmm. That's also a grocery one. And this is more of a savings, not an earning one, but have you guys ever talked on the show about Too Good To Go?
Yeah.
Oh, is that, that's the meal, leftover meal apps, right?
Go pick yourself up some croissants that they're getting ready to toss out.
That app is like my favorite. And I've found so many great places on there. I know it's going to depend on where you live, but it's like $5 and you could have like a ton of food.
Yeah. I mean, so basically like you're talking about the difference here between active versus passive ways of earning money. And so obviously these are all more active ways. And it's important to kind of prioritize. And granted, we will talk. I kind of led into this whole thing talking about ways that you can save money, because cutting your expenses, that's like the most immediate thing. But you have highlighted some of the different ways that you can immediately make money. So like I said, these are all more active ways of generating income. But a passive way that you've shown some remarkable success is via your YouTube channel. You've done well there, and like you call yourself an unlikely success story. Share with us how that channel came about and how you're doing over there.
Well, I mean, so here's the truth of how the channel came about. This actually ties into my full-time job that I was working. I saw an opportunity for us to get into video when I was working for Clark Howard. They had a channel with a ton of videos, but I saw a different way to do it. But I kind of wanted to test it out because I wasn't really sure that my managers were all that into the idea. So I just started putting up random videos. Some of my oldest videos were just about just what we've talked about, like some of these apps and ways to save money. I talked about how I paid off my mortgage on one of the earlier properties that I lived in, and things just kind of took off. And I also had some of that content that I do now, which is the testing of the streaming phone plans, internet services. So it was really just an experiment for work. I never expected some of those videos to take off. I think the mortgage video has 450,000 views. So that's an example of I sat down on the couch and I talked for 10 minutes, and 5 years later, people still watch that.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it is active in one sense, because you kind of still need to continue to create content in order to keep new viewers coming in. But then some of the videos you made a long time ago still have a lot of juice, which is really cool. Do you have any tips for someone out there who maybe has like a burning desire to share their knowledge, and they think they've seen what Mr. Beast is able to accomplish, and maybe also what you've been able to accomplish, Michael, and they're like, I could see myself doing something like that. Do you have any kind of tips of the trade, or kind of, hey, here's how you start to begin a YouTube channel and you're not just yelling into the void?
Sure. I mean, I think what you said is where I would start. Share your knowledge. It's much easier to share your knowledge than it is to share your life. So that would kind of be the difference between a channel that has more of an informational and educational view, as opposed to one that is a look at me type of channel. So if you think about problems that people are going through and you have the solutions, so I'll give you an example. I had someone came over a few months ago and helped me install a couple ceiling fans. And he had never dealt with this brand before. So then I went on YouTube and I searched, and I was like, wow, there's like no video about this. But if you look up some of the other brands like Hunter, let's say, there's like millions of views of people just filming themselves swapping out a ceiling fan. So this guy, like a big part of his business is installing ceiling fans. He could just record himself at a client's house doing it, go home and voice over all the steps. And then that's a way to like help someone out. But also that would be like turn into a semi-passive additional income for them.
Yeah.
It's not super exciting, but it could really, it would help people. And it's in that person's wheelhouse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say it's not super exciting, but like, I think for a lot of people, I think what you said about knowledge versus life, right? The ability to share either a passion or some information that you have, as opposed to feeling like you have to bear all, tell all, fabricate drama. I think there's a lot of folks who might actually find that incredibly interesting, because it seems like it's doable. There's something about, I don't know, it feels more honest, perhaps even to me, than like trying to figure out whatever like the next YouTube algorithm is going to be, because there's actual value that you are able to portray. And so the ability to say, cool, this is a clear way that I can provide value out into the world, out into YouTube, to be able to help people while at the same time hopefully generating some additional income. But
I also like kind of how you said you look to see, oh wait, there's a nobody's covering this yet, and we can be the first, we can be the pioneer here. And if you're the pioneer on that video, then you have more of a chance to stand out, right? Whereas if you're kind of saying the stuff that everyone else is saying, like, you got to kind of find that niche too. What is it that I know about that very few people are publishing on? And I think that's a good place to start creating content, and I think you can broaden from there.
The way that I've heard a lot of YouTube gurus boil it down is it's the audience. And I do agree with that. I think usually when I put the most effort into the videos and they're based on things that I know people have either reached out to me or I've done the research and I find they're interested in, those are the ones that do the best short term and over the long haul. So there is a research component to figuring out what people care about, because maybe what you care about is not something that a ton of people care about. But I do think that's a place to start, is your own interests. And back to what you said about being original, maybe you're doing okay content, but it's been done by too many people in too many different ways.
That makes sense. Okay, so Michael, I don't know if how you feel about sharing this, but like, how much of the revenue that you're able to generate from YouTube, like what percentage of your expenses would you say that covers? And the reason that I'm asking this specifically is because I think this is so interesting, because I think it can provide an insight to folks who might be considering something like this to see, oh, cool, this actually does have the ability to cover a percentage of my expenses of my day-to-day living. Do you mind sharing that?
Sure. Well, YouTubers can make money through various income sources. The one people talk the most about is probably AdSense, which is just the ads that run on your video. You turn them on and then you don't do anything else except collect the check. That can vary. It can go up and can go down depending on the months. For a channel my size, that can be pretty healthy. I'll use I have a second channel as an example. It's much smaller. That has about 3,000 subscribers and I want to say 60,000 views a month. So it just really is where I put a bunch of secondary content that doesn't really fit on the main Michael Saves channel. That regularly gets about $500 a month in just that AdSense income.
Nice.
So for just throwing a few videos up on a channel of things that interest people, that's the return.
Yeah.
But the main channel is significantly more than that.
And YouTube, of course, is the second largest search engine in the world, next to Google. So it's one of those places where if you are on there creating helpful content consistently over time, you can, and you know, don't quit your day job yet, but maybe at some point you can quit your day job if you've done it consistently over a long enough period of time, been able to build an audience, and you're providing helpful information on the reg, like you are, Michael, with both of your channels. But okay, speaking of both of your channels, like, you do so much. You create so much content specifically about streaming and how to cut costs in that area, and especially as subscription the monthly subscription amounts continue to increase for people, and there's just a proliferation of subscription options in general. We've got a lot of questions to get to with you on that, so we'll be right back with Michael Saves right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues, like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are back from the break talking with Michael from Michael Saves. And I guess zooming out a little bit, the savings that we used to experience, Michael, like when it came to cutting the cord, it used to be significant. Like it used to be, like it was a no-brainer. Like I've never paid for cable TV in my entire life, except for when I was in college because my roommates insisted on it. But like ever since I was in charge of my TV options, I've never paid because it made so much sense to eliminate cable. But it seems like that the tides have turned given the increasing prices.
Because what, Netflix is what, $22 a month now if you want the top tier?
It's so stinking expensive now. But I guess I'm curious to hear if you think it's a slam dunk decision anymore. How are you approaching that question with folks?
Well, I think you're right. It's definitely not the type of savings that it was 5 years ago, but I do think that cutting the cord is still the way to go. I don't hear from people who are going back to a cable or a satellite TV subscription. Okay. It's just changed, and that's a lot due to the way that there's just so many services and people are having to pick and choose, and the shows they want to watch are so spread out. But in addition, it's a lot due to the sports being so spread out amongst multiple services. So now you have to kind of create your own bundle, as opposed to with a cable pay TV provider, they're just delivering this one option for you.
Sure. So even if you cut the cord, basically I think what you're saying is there are live equivalents to cable that are a whole lot less expensive. Is that right?
A whole lot? I don't know. I mean, slightly is where it really depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a full replacement for what a pay TV provider like an Xfinity or DirecTV offers, it's not going to be a huge savings because those live TV services are making deals with the exact same companies that the other pay TV operators are. There are some much skinnier ones. A couple years ago, I interviewed the founder, the CEO of Philo, and he was actually one of the Facebook co-founders as well. And his service is $25 a month, but you don't get locals, you don't get sports, and you don't get a whole lot of news. It's really just the entertainment networks.
Like, do you have a general philosophy of how you think about streaming, whether like in your own life or just when you talk about streaming content, like generally speaking? And what I mean by that, like, do you have a few different platforms or subscriptions that you always have, that you always pay for? Or are you being more strategic? Like, are you targeting platforms for specific shows or certain sports or whatever it is? I'm curious how it is that you approach it.
Yeah, so what I generally do is I have one of those more expensive live TV services for about half the year, and that's coming up. I've already paused it. So the next billing cycle, that goes off. That's $75 a month right now. So that I won't pay for until September. And that's mostly because of live TV, so a mix of sports and news that I like to watch on that service. So now I'm entering a period where I feel like I have more options. So I'll go into some of the cheaper services that I haven't had throughout the year. Netflix is one of them. You just mentioned that. I haven't had Netflix in 6 months. So I'll turn that back on, check out what's been on there since I last had it, and then pause it. So I do rotate the subscriptions. That's part of the benefit of cutting the cord. But I also know that doesn't really work for everybody. If there's someone in your house who wants to watch a show and you cancel it, you're going to be hearing from that person. like they're not going to be happy with you.
Part of the benefit of the new model is that we can take that rotational approach, that there are no year-long, two-year-long, multi-year sort of contracts that are forcing us to pay somebody year after year, even if we're not getting the same value out of it. But we're still treating, I think, or a lot of Americans are still treating their streaming service like they're handcuffed to
it. And I think that's why when I hear people have this debate about like, oh, it's worse than cable now, nobody is thinking like, oh, I want a cable guy to come over to my house and spend half the day to like install it, or the same for a satellite. So the technology was always going to change because of the internet. Now what we're working through is just this period where the prices are going up, and that's because the streaming services, some of them are fighting for profitability. And then also there's content changes that they're making as a result of that same issue. They're just not making the same amount of profits as a pay TV bundle, which for decades was extremely profitable for the major media companies.
So I would think the people that would save the most money in the streaming world are people who just don't watch a lot of stuff, and also people who don't care about sports at all. But if you like sports, especially now, I feel like it's getting harder and harder almost by the month, because now Apple TV has, or Apple TV Plus, whatever it's called, has the MLS soccer. Peacock, I believe, has the European soccer leagues, right? It used to be that, okay, at least you subscribe to this one thing and you get all the sports, but that doesn't even seem to be the case anymore. So what would you tell sports lovers when it comes to streaming about kind of what services to have, and then how to make sure that they're not spending like a ridiculous sum of money to watch the sports they love?
Sure. Well, the sports consumers, the ones who are especially into multiple types of sports, are always going to be paying the most, because what most people don't really understand is with that old pay TV model, the price of that was the price that it was because of sports. And it would have been even higher if people had the option to opt out of sports. So in a way, the sports programming has always been subsidized by people who don't watch a whole lot of sports. It's not what people want to hear, but that's the truth of it.
Because like ESPN would cost like the cable companies
$10 a month.
Yeah, just that one channel, and then all these other channels they might pay them 33 cents a month or something like that.
But nothing.
So ESPN it was the big behemoth in there.
And there's changes with that too. So later this year, there is going to be a service that's going to include ESPN as well as a bunch of other sports networks. The estimated price, nothing official yet, is $40 to $50 a month. And then in 2025, there's going to be a standalone ESPN, and that price is reportedly going to be $25 to $30 a month for ESPN and then all the other ESPN family of networks. So that kind of just, when you put $30 against your total cable TV bill or pay TV bill, you kind of see like where all the money is going. It's going to sports. The people who have the easiest time are probably still NFL fans, and that's because in your local market, it's always going to be on a broadcast TV station. Now, Amazon's got rights to Thursday Night Football. Last year, there was a playoff game. Last season, there was a playoff game on Peacock. The next season, there's going to be a playoff game on Amazon Prime. So there is still some extra cost there for people who want to watch a lot of games, especially from teams outside of your market. But if you only care about the team for the city that you live in, the NFL is still reasonable because you just need your local channels. Many people can get those, of course, with an antenna.
That's what I was going to say.
Digital,
that's what,
over the air.
I think people forget about the antenna, and they forget about all the channels that it can provide. I swear, with my antenna, I log in, and I'm shocked at the number of channels I get. I assume that a good many of them are just kind of garbage channels, but there's never been more free content that you can get over the air.
Sure, and I agree with that. And when I paused the subscription, the first thing I did after I paused it is I put my antenna back up. I've just got one of those indoor antennas. And just like you said, it's got like 100 channels because it's all the locals, and then they have these digital sub channels with a lot of content that I think you also see on similar services like the free streaming services, Pluto and Roku Channel and Tubi. There's a lot of overlap there. But the the
Sony's Crackle, that's another one I feel like.
Crackle's good too. Yeah. And I read recently that antenna use is actually on the way up. It's now like one in five households. And maybe if the prices go up, more people will give it a shot.
Exactly. It makes sense when you see how affordable these antennas are. Like, you're spending $20, $30 for like the extra long range one. You get it positioned in a window, tape it up there or whatever. Like, at our old house, we literally like thumbtacked it to the wall behind the TV. So you literally couldn't even see it, and it just blended in with a dark wall.
Yeah. They make them like flat. I mean, they take up no space.
It's just like a sheet of notebook paper with a cord attached to it. But we're talking about some of the different free content that you can get out there, Michael. Like, what do you think about like some of those different free apps, whether it be Tubi or Crackle or whatever else? Actually, we haven't even talked about this, but Hoopla, which I normally use for audiobooks, I saw that, I don't know, there's video on there that you can now reserve as well. But
Canopy as well, right?
Yeah, that's a whole
Roku,
other
thing.
Yeah,
that's with your library card.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing, but I'm curious what your thoughts are. Like, is it worth the hassle or the time to go looking for some of that free content via some of those free apps?
Sure, it's worth the time, especially if you don't want to pay, and there's a lot of people who don't want to pay. Those apps have a ton of content, and it's in that traditional TV feel. Like, there are some people who open up a pay service like Netflix, and they get totally overwhelmed with the options, and they end up watching nothing. So you can open up Pluto, and it has a guide that looks just like your old cable guide, and it'll serve you a bunch of stuff for all the interests. I think that they typically do the best job of replacing the type of content that airs during the daytime on regular broadcast TV networks. So there's news shows, there's court shows, talk shows, crime shows. That's where I see those free services, but also movies. If you just want to open up one of the free services, Tubi has a pretty good movie selection. You can find something to watch. You just are going to have ads to break it up.
All right, you mentioned the overwhelm in opening Netflix. I think a lot of people feel that. And there's a deluge of content. Specifically, I think Netflix has, or at least used to, prioritize the amount of offerings over the quality. And it's not that they didn't have some quality stuff, but there's just a ridiculous amount of content to sort through, and the recommending algorithm is okay. But do you have any tips to help people find the kind of content that they're going to enjoy watching? Because I think now the average person opens up the app, and I swear I saw this stat somewhere, they spend somewhere between 18 to 20 minutes trying to figure out what to watch,
just clicking around
before they even start watching a show. That's so crazy. And I know there are new, like, even AI kind of apps out there that can help you figure out what make sense for you based on your viewing history and the thumbs ups and stuff like that. But do you have any recommendations for people? Any of those apps you found most helpful?
Well, I mean, my approach is very simple. I use the watch list features within the apps, but also I'm mostly a Roku guy, and they have a way to create a watch list across multiple apps. So you go into your save list, and then you just pop up whatever you haven't checked out lately. And then I'm sure you guys can relate to just people in your life recommending shows to you that you've never heard of. So instead of just being like, I'll just put them in my notes app on the phone.
Yes.
So I've got plenty of stuff that, and when it's time to, check out that service, whether it's a free or paid service, whatever it's on, then I'll already know what I want to watch because I'll have something to talk with my friends about.
Yes. I love it, Michael. That's exactly. I've gotten more organized about that over the past year because I realized I had this one particular note where I would jot all of this down. And so I said, you know what? I literally did this last year. I want to start making this official. And so at the top, I added a title, and it's called Consume. And it's where I put everything that I want to either read,
it
watch,
says potato chips,
or or listen to. But then very recently, I started categorizing some of the different recommendations I would hear. Because you always ask the follow-up. Oh, what's that on? And then they're like, oh, that's on Max. And so, boom, I've like tagged that under my Max list. But
I've been telling Matt about Tokyo Vice. It's great.
Have you heard of that one, Michael?
No, I haven't. Well, now I'm going to have to add it to my list.
It's underrated. It's Max.
That one's on Max? That's one of the
on Max.
Max.
And I've got Max right now. So one other tip that I have, which is not going to work for everyone, but it works for me. If you have a Roku, you know there are those four keys on the bottom that are basically advertisements. So what I've done is, and I don't use those, So I've basically put labels over top that show the services that I do have. So it ruins the functionality of those keys, but it's a reminder of the services that I'm paying for right on my remote.
So sort of like when you write like a spending category on a specific credit card.
Yeah.
That's exactly what inspired me to do it.
Is it really?
It's putting like a sticker on a credit card that says your percentage. That's why I was like, I need to do this for my streaming services.
Oh, no, that's so great.
We're cut from the same cloth. Yes, for sure. Okay, what's your take, Michael, on ad-supported versus ad-free plans? Because you can save a lot of money by watching some ads. And they're not as bad. I think people get annoyed with them, but they're not as bad as traditional TV was. I mean, we are old enough to remember the 21-minute show that fits inside of a 30-minute half hour. That's because there were 9 minutes worth of ads, guys. Like, that's why. And now when you watch these, and I get that kind of we fell out of the habit of watching ads and it sucks to go back, but it seems like the gap has grown significantly between the ad-free and the ad-supported plans. And I think you've said, too, that some are worse than others, right?
Sure, absolutely. And I'm almost 40. I think you guys are right there with me. So I have that same experience of I know what it was like to have to sit through those ads. And if you didn't have a VCR, you weren't skipping through any ads. You just had to stick with the ads.
I love that you didn't go back to just the, what they call it?
DVR.
Yeah. It's not DVR. You went to VCR, man.
TiVo.
I never had one of those. So.
I didn't either. We had a VCR. But as far as the ad-supported services, the best ones, and I've tested them all, as far as the lightest ad load are now Amazon Prime, which is added advertising, Netflix, Max, and Peacock. Those are the ones that I find the most tolerable. And especially, it also depends on what you're watching. So sometimes I'll catch a movie and they'll just have 2 minutes of ads before the movie starts and then no ads through it. So yeah. For people who are really concerned about the ads, I say just like give it a try for a month. You can always switch back to those plans that are ad-free. But as far as managing costs, the ad-supported plans are the best for the companies. So those are going to be priced lower because between the ad revenue and the subscription price, they actually end up making these companies more money than the ad-free plans.
And one last tip that piggies back on that is the sales that happen often around Black Friday are for the ad-supported plans. So I've got Hulu for a full year for 99 cents a month. Granted, the Hulu ads are more annoying than they are in a lot of the other streaming services, but I otherwise just wouldn't have Hulu. But $12 a year to be able to watch even just two or three things on there, I mean, it seems like a...
What do you think, Michael? $12 a year to have your...
Am I being cheap?
Your film interrupted by like a Geico
ad? I've
got
the same deal. I will say that's one of the apps that has stuff that I like to watch, but I would open it a lot more if there were fewer ads. Hulu and Paramount Plus are very aggressive with their ads.
Yeah.
That's the downside. If it was just a couple ads at the beginning, it's like, okay, you know what? I'll watch 5 minutes of ads if I can do that while I go pop the popcorn, right? But to have a movie interrupted in the middle, as you're watching there with the kids, that kind of thing, like on a Friday night, that kind of bums me out.
Someone once told me they do push-ups during all the commercial breaks. So I immediately thought they're not watching Hulu because their arms would be really sore by the
they would be
of
jacked.
Just like one show.
Yeah.
Right, they'd be jacked.
That's how they stay so healthy, Michael. But so these are ways that you can save monthly, right? Like when it comes to some of the different streaming subscriptions, but there are some other ways that you can cut expenses every single month. We'll get to a few more of those right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back. We're still talking with Michael Timmerman, talking about getting scrappy to save some money. And Michael is nothing if not scrappy. And I'm hoping that we can all learn and adapt how we handle our monthly bills thanks to his ability to test some of these services and offer his best advice.
Just avoid Paramount. That's what I have.
Paramount. Yeah. Don't do that one. And just go back and see what you're paying, man, because you might be paying for stuff you're not even using. You
That's
might
true.
Not have even realized it. That is just like low-hanging fruit tip right there. But Michael, in addition to streaming services, you test other things too. Streaming is kind of, I feel like, what you're known for, and I appreciate all the information you just shared. But talk to me about home internet. I feel like every time I ask someone about home internet service, I always get a reply that they're paying like $70 or $80 a month, which is more than I'd be willing to pay. I feel like I'm always able to save money, but I just have to stay on it every single year, kind of pitting the two internet providers that I have against each other. But you've also talked about a third way in the internet space, 5G home internet. So can you talk to me about how you think about home internet and whether these new 5G players, T-Mobile and Verizon, whether their services are worth it?
Well, I'm using them right now. So things have gone pretty well so far. And right now, I think I'm communicating with you on the Verizon one. But I've got both of them. I've tested them long term.
Okay.
I think they will work for a lot more people than you might realize. And that's because they let you connect to the internet, surf the web, you can check your emails, run your home security, some forms of gaming. I think that is where things can kind of break down with the 5G home internet services. But people, I think in general, think they need the highest speed. And that's because they're marketed that constantly on television. They need gig speed when most households do not. I'm sitting in a 2,000 square foot house. This little box from Verizon and the same for the one from T-Mobile, they work throughout the whole house.
Very impressive.
You just plug it in and go, right? And what are the speeds? What is the price point? And how much savings does it represent over maybe traditional home internet
service? So you mentioned 75 to 80, I think, and I think that's in line with what a lot of people tell me they've paid, maybe 50 to 75. These newer options are around 50. They're cheaper if you have a phone plan with that phone company, but that is going to be a postpaid wireless plan. So you need an expensive phone plan to get a savings on the home internet.
Which might be worth it if you are looking at the bigger picture, right? The ability to look at your overall holistic financial picture as opposed to getting the absolute cheapest cell phone provider. But now, you're stuck paying Xfinity Internet and, you know, they haven't returned your call in like 2 or 3 months.
I want to wear this as a badge of honor. Matt and I, we pay $25 here a month through Xfinity for, I think we get 150, 200 megs of speed.
Well, they just did like a speed upgrade.
They upgraded
it. Yeah.
Yes.
So you get that you're on the lowest plan.
And it's $25 a month and it's plenty of speed. So it's, I
Absolutely.
Think
that
you don't necessarily have to go to one of the newfangled things. I mean, maybe it works better for you where you live, but it's all about shopping around and kind of pitting them against each other. That's also going to lead to savings.
And some people just don't have those options, though, Joel. Like, some people don't have another option to pit against Xfinity, so they may pay that $25, but it's for 1 year, and then that doubles the next year. So that's the, if you're willing to switch every couple years, yeah, you're going to be able to keep your internet bill $20, $30 lower than that average you mentioned.
Again, it's all about being scrappy. So, Michael, one last question for you. I think you've tried something like 15 different phone plans over the years. So
maybe more than that, I think. I definitely really? At least 15. Some of them no longer exist or they've merged. There's been some consolidation in that space.
Okay, so over the years, like, what have you learned? And specifically, like, what are the best discounters that you typically recommend? And who are you currently using? Are you using Verizon in order to gain access to that 5G box?
I don't have a postpaid plan, and I haven't for a very long time. I have now Visible, which is owned by Verizon. Mm-hmm. And that does get you a discount on the Verizon home internet. So that's a little bit of a savings hack. You get a better discount with the Verizon postpaid service.
Very cool. So you got the Verizon network, you're paying discounted through Visible, but you're getting the Verizon home internet.
For a discount. So it's I think it's a $10 a month discount on the home internet.
What other cell phone providers in the discount space do you typically recommend? I know some people tend to think, "Oh, the discounter, it's got to be inferior quality, right? It's my calls are gonna drop more frequently." Matt and I talk about how the MVNOs, they're on the backbone of the major networks, so that's not the case. So you shouldn't have to worry about that. There are some minor trade offs, but yeah. Do you have any other favorite discounters out there?
I think what you said is a lot of that is just dated information. When I started reviewing these, Sprint was still around. And a lot of the same companies today that the MVNOs today used to use Sprint. And Sprint's reputation was just not good. I know you used to have it, Joel, right?
That was the lowest amount I've ever paid. We had 10 lines on...
There's 10 friends, and
Yeah, and it, literally people I didn't know, and they're cousins. And we were paying $100-something a month, low hundreds, like $115 after taxes and everything. So, and that was back when you had to have multiple lines in order to get a substantial discount. You get a solo line? Sorry, you're paying $70 a month. Sure. Like, there's no way around it. And I really appreciate that in the cell phone space, that has gone away over the last 2 or 3, 4 years.
So
that
exactly.
You can get a single line and basically pay the same price.
And also with Sprint no longer around now, and there's not that one carrier with inferior coverage who kind of put a stain on the MVNOs. Now, I think it's really just a matter of figuring out who has the best coverage in your area. If you like the postpaid service that you've got, whether that's Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, there's going to be a cheaper option on all three of those. So you can test them out, compare the prices. A lot are generally in the same space. You can get savings sometimes if you pay for a year in advance, or you can pay monthly and still get a low price. Visible's good. Mint's been good. Telo is pretty good. US Mobile, another good one too.
Okay. And what about Google Fi for international travel?
Yes. I mean, if you travel a lot, but if you're traveling, if you're planning a trip 2 years from now, you don't need Google Fi. There's other ways that you can get data coverage when you're overseas. You get
literally the eSIMs, right? Yeah, eSIMs are a great way to do that. Okay, Michael, very, very last question for real. Are you just doing this profession, to get the tax write-off on the streaming services and the internet that you would have otherwise paid for and paid full price for?
No, absolutely not. It's really not that big of a write-off. This is fun for me. And personal finance is a passion of mine. I wouldn't call it an obsession of mine. But I'm just sharing people what I'm doing to save money. And it's going to work for some people. It's not going to work for everybody, right? Though that's the thing about this space. And what you guys do is that people can listen and they can pick and choose what will actually work for their life.
Yeah,
that's right. Without going completely crazy because there's a 2-minute ad in the middle of the movie, like at the most inopportune time. Some folks will put up with that. Others won't.
Some Matts won't. Yep.
But Michael, we appreciate you coming on the podcast today. Where can folks check out the different products and services that you are reviewing and talking about?
Sure. MichaelSaves.com. Michael Saves on YouTube. That's how you find me. And you can email me too, Michael@MichaelSaves.com. I do free personal recommendations.
Love it. Very cool.
Michael, thanks for joining us, my friend. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right. Great conversation about slashing your streaming. Should we have called the episode that, Joel, instead of... You like the scrappy.
I like scrappy.
No, fun conversation with Michael Timmerman again.
Wasn't there a cartoon animal named Scrappy?
Scrappy, Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Was it Scooby-Doo's like little bro or what was it?
Oh.
Scrappy-Doo?
Yeah, Scrappy-Doo.
Okay.
He's like the little guy.
Okay.
But do you have a big takeaway from our conversation today?
I do. It's that you hate advertisements on your streaming services. At least in the middle, you don't mind them on the front end.
So we didn't even talk about this, but I hate them so much that I would rather... cut all the different services. Like, we literally don't pay any subscriptions to any of the different streaming services right now. We decided to go cold turkey, basically. And we're kind of seeing how long we can go before the kids revolt. Because that's essentially where we are right now.
Okay, so not even Disney Plus for the kids.
No, okay. We don't have it.
Wow.
Like, literally, they were looking to watch something the other day. And two of the younger girls were like, can we just rent this one movie? We're willing to pay. It was like, I think it was $4 for the rentals, like $3.99. And so each, there's two of the girls, and they each chipped in $2 so that they could rent this movie. And I'm like, hey, we can watch something else, or we can go play. We'll go for a hike. And they're like, well, we really want to watch this. And I was like, all right. And so they pulled out their $2. And
it's the forced Great Depression at Matt's house.
It's the ability to value your money in a way, just aligning your spending with your values.
Well, it's more than money. It's not the $7 a month even necessarily, I would imagine.
It's a combination of everything.
It's a little bit that.
But. Yeah, it's a little bit of the financial, but also like how can we better spend our time perhaps as a family.
And by the way, you can't skip those ads. It's so easy to skip the podcast ads, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to say my big takeaway is when Michael talked about his weekly financial checklist.
Ooh.
And I think it's the systemization of things means you don't have to constantly be worried about money or constantly be thinking about it. When you have this kind of Friday morning routine that he has, he can check in on his money. Mm-hmm. And he can very quickly assess kind of what's going down, how things are shaping up.
I like it.
And, you know, what changes he needs to make. And I think he's spot on. Most people think, you're money guys. You probably have to think about money all the time. And it's like, I am kind of obsessed with it, unlike Michael. Like, I love reading about stuff, and I love just kind of the way money impacts our lives. Like, I am just generally interested in finance. But when it comes to, like, my own money, no, I have some systems in place. They're pretty chill, and I don't feel like I'm having to like think about my money all the time. I just kind of like the topic in general. So that's just my weird oddity.
No, I think it's so true. If you feel like it is something that is sort of taking over your mind, the ability to kind of partition it. And to put it in the silos so that way you're like, all right, it's money time. You attack it and then you let it go.
It's kind of like the flight of the Conchords. It's business time, but it's money time.
It's money time. But for him, I really liked a part of that was his weekly credit card payoff, which stood out to me because most folks, or at least myself, I'm looking at it month to month, but he's checking in on it every single week. And I think that's so smart. The ability just to stay on top of your spending, because you could potentially, let's say you forget. And it builds up. You don't realize how much you've actually spent, let's say, on groceries or in entertainment. And by the time you get to the end of the month, well, it's too late.
Yeah.
You've already spent that money. So that's one of the downsides of using credit cards. And his ability to stay on top of that, I think, is huge. But as far as my big takeaway, well, it's going to pertain to streaming. And it's going to be to rotate the different services that you use. Go in there, hit pause, the ability to target specific shows. And one of the ways you can accomplish this efficiently, Michael shared that this is something that he does. I do this on my phone as well, but keep a running list of the different things that you want to watch. That way, when you do, say, choose to pay for Max for a couple months, boom, you can rip through that list. You're not watching crap that you don't really want to watch, but you're watching it because you pay for it, as opposed to proactively going after the stuff that you do want to consume.
I love what he did with his remote, there are all these little different things you can do to, I think, remind yourself of what you're paying for. And I love the seasonal nature of his approach too. He's like, I'll have a
target it.
It's not always on. expensive live TV. It's YouTube TV for 6 months, and then he's doing away with that $75 or whatever it is dollar bill. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's a good way to think about things. And the other thing is just to stop caring about sports, because that's going to be the most effective way to save money. And I am curious to see how good this new sports bundle he mentioned, how good it is, because I think that might be a great way for sports lovers to save, is sign up for that and avoid everything else.
That's true. We'll see. We'll talk about it later this year, man. Yeah. But the beer you and I enjoyed today was called a Buzzfest. This is a beer by Infinite Ale Works. A seasonal ale.
Yeah.
Is this one you picked up?
I picked this up down in Ocala, Florida.
Ocala.
Actually, really cool little microbrewery there just outside of downtown Ocala. And I was like, they only had two packaged beers, so this was by default kind of the choice I made.
All right, I'm getting it.
Yeah, but no, I like this one. It's got Oktoberfest sort of vibes, kind of a malty, light brown beer, but it's got like
malty.
Mm-hmm. A nice sweetness too, going along with it. So, if you like the Oktoberfest style beers,
sweetness,
and you can tell that's when they brewed this. So maybe we're drinking this, 6 months past
maybe
the brew date,
a bit past prime. It's been sitting. We've had such great listeners sending in amazing beers that this is one that we've literally just kept in the fridge. All these months. But yeah, super malty, super bready. It reminded me, we've been throwing down a bunch of English muffins recently. I don't know, like, we've all been on the Nooks and Crannies original bread, and this totally, it reminds me of that a whole lot.
What's better than the Nooks and Crannies?
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, it's so good. But yeah, this German amber pilsner. Is it a pilsner?
Marzen.
Well, it's a Marzen, but it's like isn't that like the base?
Maybe.
The base beer?
I don't know.
But either way, enjoyed it. I'm thankful that you picked this one up for us, buddy. But we'll make sure to have show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com. We'll link to Michael's site, his YouTube channel as well. But buddy, that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.